and welcome to Crazy Talk Podcast. This is Angela Campagna from Face to Face Therapy. I'm so glad to be here today. I also have with me my friend Jason. Jason, can you say hi?
Hey, everybody. It's Jason again with Crazy Talk. Glad to be back with y'all.
Yeah, and bear with us, guys. We are doing this in a new format. We've got some people calling in. We're in different locations, but we're trying to adapt and overcome because that's what we do. We have a super awesome guest today, David Carnahan. Or Carnahan. I get nervous because I'm about to say this big, long title of his. He is Director of Military and Veteran Affairs and Deputy District Director for Congressman French Hill. That's a mouthful, David.
It's definitely a mouthful. Thank you for welcoming me on.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
So like you said, I'm currently the Director of Military and Veteran Affairs and the Deputy District Director for Congressman French Hill. Been in the office since 2015. Born and raised in Arkansas. I was born in Russellville, Arkansas, and graduated from Russellville High School. Shortly after there, I joined the Marine Corps. Was in the Marine Corps for a period of time, and then came back home to Arkansas and got back in the Army in 2004, and just retired last year, just shy of my 20 years. I'm medically retired, just shy of 20 years. I got a beautiful wife, two kids. My daughter just graduated from high school during Corona on Monday, and I got a 14-year-old boy.
That's awesome, David. Thank you for sharing some more about your personal life. I've met your wife. She's amazing, and she's a nurse, actually, so this is probably a crazy time for her. And graduating during this, wow, your family's been busy.
Very busy. Yeah, it's wearing a mask to graduate, and they wouldn't let but six of us in there, and we had to take our temperature, answer questions, and they wore gloves and masks. It was different.
Wow, you've been through a lot of changes. Wow, Marine to Army, that blows my mind. But now you're in your new positions. Can you tell us a little bit about that journey of military? And you said you retired medically, which I want to ask you some questions about that. So I think I just threw out like five questions. How about you start where you want to start?
So how I got to this journey, I was graduated from UALR with a Bachelor of Applied Science in 2015. And about a week after I graduated, I was up at the governor's office in his conference room witnessing the signing of a bill for student veterans. And there I met Kevin Steele, who used to work for the Secretary of State's office. He was the Director of Military and Veteran Affairs for Secretary of State Mark Martin at the time. We're still friends to this day, a very good friend of mine. But anyway, I told him, I said, man, I need a job. I didn't have anything at the time. And he said, what do you want to do? I said, man, I want to help veterans. I want to make a difference somewhere. And about a week after that, the story I was told anyway, he ran into my predecessor, Tom McNabb, who used to be the Director of Military and Veteran Affairs. And Tom said, do you know anybody? Because I'm looking to hire somebody for the Wounded Warrior Fellowship Program, which is a program through the House of Representatives. There are 72 of us, or I'm not in the program anymore, but 72 Wounded Warrior Fellowship Program employees around the entire United States. Each congressman can apply to get one. It just so happened Congressman Hill was looking for somebody. And Kevin says he took about a turn around and took about two steps away, and he said, I know somebody's looking for a job. And I applied, and the cards fell into place, and I got a job there. The Wounded Warrior Fellowship Program is 2 years. So at the end of that 2 years, I was hired on permanent with his staff and made senior staff member the same year. And the year after, became Director of Military and Veteran Affairs. And then earlier this year, added the title of Deputy District Director. It's been quite a wild ride. Helped a lot of veterans. I think I've opened just over 2,000 cases in 4.5 years. And I think the office total of returned benefits to veterans, and I say returned benefits as in somebody applies for disability and gets denied to the VA through our help, if we're able to overturn that or get them a higher percentage, what have you, we track that dollar figure. And I believe the last total was $25 million.
When you're helping them, just to kind of explain it better, even for me, how you're helping the veterans, do you help them apply or appeals, or kind of how does that go down?
So congressional offices aren't allowed to apply for them because if they got denied, we become liable. If they get approved, we become liable. So once they've applied, if they're denied and their VSO files the appeal, we can jump in and coordinate directly with BVA. A lot of times the VA will miss evidence, or the constituent will have, the veteran will have evidence that wasn't used in the denial or approval of their appeal or claim. So we kind of jump in, and there's, it just runs the gamut. I could sit here for hours and explain to you different scenarios that I've come across in the years that I've worked for Congressman Hill. It runs the gamut. But the way we help is just to coordinate directly with the VA, BVA, VHA, whether they need an appointment, whether they, the VA took their medication away for whatever reason and they need help getting it back. If it's to do with military and veteran affairs, we do it. I mean, they could have a debt, they could have a denial for an appeal, they could have anything. And it's, I find myself in a unique position to be very qualified for this job because I'm 100% permanent total disabled veteran. And I got my first rating when I came home from Iraq, and I got my first rating in 2008, and have on different levels, I wouldn't say fought the VA, but I've had to argue my disabilities, if you will. And there's not too many facets of the VA that I haven't been involved with. I've had a debt with the VA. I've had the VA send me a proposal to reduce. I've had the VA deny my claims and go into appeal for 10 and a half years. I've hit almost every marker, if you will, that you can to the VA. So I have a lot of knowledge in that respect. So it gives me a unique perspective to help people and kind of steer them in the direction where they will be most successful for them.
Jason, don't you have some experience with this too?
Oh yeah. I have probably about a 10-year experience. I'm trying to think. I put in my first claim probably 2008. So that's over 10 years. So, oh yeah, I've hit a lot of those markers that David was talking about. So we could, we've been friends for a while though. I actually married David. So good dude. But yeah, we need to help those veterans get through all the VA stuff out there. The quicker, the better.
Yeah, that's a big
one. Yeah, Angela, I think I left that part out is, when I said Took and I have known each other for a long time, he was actually officiated my wedding. So
I've been friends with y'all a year or two. So, but I'm learning so much about the two of you more recently. Didn't know that about you, Jason, but I think it's awesome. And when I was doing research on you, David, I found all these articles written about you, a chapter or so in a book written by Tom Cotton. And I read through a lot of that, and there was one quote that really stood out to me, which I think ties into you wanting to help other veterans in the way that you are now. There's a quote from one of the many articles that says, "You do not think about people shooting at you. For me, it was pretty traumatic experience to watch a helo go down with people from my unit. You don't think about yourself at the moment. You think about the people on the other aircraft." So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So in 2007, there was a helicopter from Arkansas. I was deployed to Iraq, stationed in Balad, and we were running a normal mission, took off from Balad and landed at Taji. I was the crew chief on Blackhawks in Iraq in combat fly in pairs. You got chalk one in the front, chalk two in the back. The individuals, I was a crew chief. I sat right behind the pilot on the right-hand side. On the left-hand side, your gunner. So we weren't always a crew chief, but in that particular flight, I was the crew chief of the entire flight. So I was in the first helicopter on the right-hand side. And I had what they call a pimp sheet. So you're tracking. You get a list of everyone you're going to pick up, how much they weigh, how much their gear weighs, and you figure out who goes where and put them on either helicopter, depending on where you're flying to and what you're doing and when they get off and all that. So we stopped at Taji, dropped a few passengers and picked up some more. And when the crash originally happened, they reported it was 13 people had passed away. But it turned out we left one girl. She would have been the youngest person on board and the lowest ranking on board. Turns out she was in the chow hall and she missed the flight. But we picked up out of Taji and went around, headed into Baghdad. And right after we turned right, I cleared right and we turned and then looked back. And just as Chalk 2 had turned, they took an RPG to the fuel cell and caught fire and started to descend. They were about 10 feet off the ground, and we thought we were going to land. I was calling their landing, and it wasn't until I found out later on, they right after that, they climbed to about 150 feet and then nosedived into the ground, twisting the aircraft, and then the rest of it caught on fire. But found out later on that the reason they climbed up was they were taking, it was a complex attack. We had gunfire coming from many directions. They took heavy machine gun fire to the broom closet, which is the panel between the pilot and the crew chief, and it severed all the controls. They lost control of the aircraft, and it climbed up and then nosedived. So I told our pilot, Max Timmons, we need to get on the ground now. I got a little impatient as we were getting close to the ground, and I grabbed my 9mm and a fire extinguisher and jumped out from about 20, 25 foot. At the time, didn't really pay much attention to it. I kind of stumbled and then just took off running. We were about 75 yards away, crossing the ground, and found some of these details I'm giving you, I didn't find out till later on. But as I'm crossing the ground, the first tracer round missed my head by a few inches. And the second one missed my torso by a few inches. So I started weaving and then got to the nose of the aircraft and crawled around on my hands and knees to the other side of the aircraft because the smoke was rolling across the nose where the wind was blowing. Found out later on that was I think it was a Russian Gal 17.3mm anti-aircraft gun that they'd modified and was trying to shoot at us on the ground. Got around the aircraft and took the fire extinguisher. I saw my commander was in the front seat, right seat. And it just so happened that particular day, the commander and the first sergeant were trying to relieve some of us from flying so much. So they were both on the aircraft. We lost our commander and first sergeant the same day. So I took the fire extinguisher and was beating on his door as I couldn't get it open. I guess the crash had kind of melded the aircraft together, and was beating on the door handle, trying to get it open, was unsuccessful in doing so. I noticed behind me, and about this time, my gunner, Terry Evans, showed up. We start trying to gather things and retrieve bodies. When the aircraft twisted and landed, the back door had slid apart, and some of the passengers in the back had slid out, but they were all on fire. And the impact was so bad that the mount, and so that on the right side was Gary Brown. He was our trainer, trained all of us how to be crew chiefs. When they hit so hard that it ripped the gun and the mount off the aircraft, and it was 50 feet away from the aircraft. Nobody survived. Everybody perished. We were there for a while, called for backup. Alabama crew came in. Some Apaches came in, took care of everything else. But that day we lost 12 people, three of them from Arkansas Army National Guard.
David, thank you so much for sharing that with us. I know that is not easy to talk about. I know that this could be triggering for a lot of veterans. Plus, with this weekend being Memorial Day weekend, I really wanted to kind of be able to share with people that aren't veterans sort of some of the sacrifices and some of the things that our veterans do and what Memorial Day is for. With that being said, all of us have volunteered at some point, still do, with We Are the 22. If you're a veteran and you're struggling with listening to this or anything else this weekend, their number is 1-855-923-7384, 1-855-932-7384. Jason, did you have some follow-up for that?
Yeah, I was just going to say that this is perfect timing for this being Memorial Day weekend, and just to everyone out there, remember the significance of Memorial Day and to honor the fallen and their families. Thank you for telling your story, David.
Yeah, it's like, I think all of us, especially, there's some silence, right? You know, because it's just, you talking about that and thinking about it is just overwhelming.
Yeah, and I kind of, you said something that kind of stuck in my head, was we've all sacrificed, we've all volunteered. And I just want to be clear that, I mean, I might have volunteered. I miss my sons. When I got deployed, I went to a school before I got deployed, so I was gone 4 months, came home for a week, deployed, pre-mobed, and all that. And I think I was home a total of 3 weeks and 2 years. I made no sacrifice. That's my son was 2 months old when I left, and he was 2 years old when I came home. That's not a sacrifice, though. I've stayed in touch with some of the Gold Star families, and specifically Wendy Taylor, who is my commander's wife. Her and her children made a sacrifice. I mean, I love them to death. Her son recently graduated from West Point. Her daughter's going to college. I mean, her kids have turned out amazing. They've made sacrifices. I was in a bad place at the wrong time, and that's not a sacrifice. time away from home, it sucks and it's terrible. We knew what we signed up for, though. But I made no sacrifice. Just wanted to put that out there.
No, thank you, David, for explaining that. It's a really, really, you know, I don't even know how to speak around it. It's so complicated. It's so emotional. I know that those that have been affected, like those families have, it's hard for other people to really realize that. And I think that was one of the questions that kind of came in is, you know, but you already sort of answered it, sort of how would you explain this to, say, like, or what would you say to, like, a young man or woman getting ready to join the military? Would you have anything to say to them?
Do it. I mean, I think everybody should join. I think everybody should do 4 years. You want to do more? Great. You want to make a career out of it? Great. You want to get out of 4 years and get you some free college? I mean, do what you do, what works for you. But I think everybody should join personally. I mean, I've had some good, I've had some bad. But the military did wonders for my life. I had some difficult times when I was growing up. I think everybody does. But the Marine Corps set me on a path that I wouldn't trade for $1 million. The military has been great for me. It's been great for my family. It's been great for my kids. Sure, there were some times it sucked. I missed holidays, missed birthdays. But when you look at the big picture, when you look at the 50,000-foot view, it did great things for my life.
Yeah, I can second that. You know, I didn't have serve in combat and make, you know, those types of sacrifices. But I can definitely say that I would do it again. Like, I would join the Marine Corps again. And I know, similar to you, that I had some challenges in my youth, shall we say, and it really did change me and help me get me on to the path of where I can help people now, you know?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, I love to look at it objectively of just serving something bigger than yourself, and serving others and serving the people to your left and right and the sisters and brothers beside you, and that's what it's all about. And then so joining and figuring that out for yourself and your life is one of the most beautiful things and best decisions anyone can make.
David, do you mind telling us a little bit? You told us how you got to your position, but I kind of just wonder if there's sort of some other qualifications to be in that role. Like, do you have to be a veteran? Do you have to be disabled? Like, what are the requirements to help people the way that you do today?
So for the Wounded Warrior Fellowship Program, they do have requirements, and they've changed. When I first got into that program, you had to be a minimum of 30%, no higher than staff sergeant or sergeant first class. I believe it's been a while. And they've changed it. I believe the requirements are still 30%, but it's changed to no higher than E3 or E4. I can't remember. I haven't looked at it in quite some time. So they do have requirements. Now, as far as working for our office, doing what we do or doing what I do, and we've recently put out and are in the process of hiring more people or hiring another veteran. But no, you don't necessarily have to be a veteran. You don't necessarily have to be disabled. I mean, you don't have to have any experience at all. Does it help? Yes. You're talking to veterans every single day, and a lot of them won't speak to somebody about their problems if they're not a veteran and they don't know that. I mean, I get people all the time that will call and have a particular attitude, when the topic of conversation comes up and they realize that I'm actually a veteran too, I retired last year, they change 100, just a 180. So if you didn't have that experience, it's difficult to understand what they're saying and understand where they're coming from. That doesn't mean you can't do the job, though. And same with being disabled. You don't necessarily have to have a disability. Does it make it easier for you to understand the job and relate to somebody who's dealing with the VA? Absolutely, but not required, no.
Well, you know, I
think mostly just you need to have a passion to want to help other people, help somebody besides yourself. Because for us, it's not it's not about the recognition. I mean, it's nice to hear thank yous once in a while, but when I have somebody reach back out to me and they say, "What you did saved my life," I didn't wind up back in jail. I didn't lose my house. I didn't lose my car. One of the most rewarding ones we ever had was a gentleman, and obviously I can't speak to specifics, but He shared the same last name and same first name with a guy that lives in North Carolina. And this gentleman was 30 years older, much, much, much older gentleman. Didn't share the same middle name, didn't share the same social security number, didn't even share the same birth date. But the guy in North Carolina defaulted on his home loan, and the VA said, "Oh, that's our guy," and started garnishing his, they actually took his entire pension, his only source of income. It's a much, much elderly gentleman, 96 years old at the time, took his pension. And we were able to go in. I was able to go in and fix it within a week or less, and returned all his money to him and kept him from losing his home. It's that kind of stuff where you're saving people's lives. You just got to have an understanding of where people are coming from, and then want to do something that's greater than yourself. Like Took said, you're doing something for somebody else. It's not about the recognition. It's not about what am I going to get from it. It's who can I help that needs it, and where can I share the experience that I've got to change somebody's life? And that it makes, it's why I love, absolutely love doing what I do. I mean, I've come into work an hour early every day, have been for nearly 5 years, love doing what I do. I wouldn't want to be doing anything else.
That's awesome, David. I love it. I loved it. I think this is also a good time to say, you know, because I kind of know I've contacted you in your office, you know, officially to, you know, or referred other veterans to you that I know that are having, struggling with things. Sort of what is the best way to do that? Like if you are a veteran out there, you do have some big issues like this going on. How do they reach out?
Oh, call the office. Yeah. The heartbeat, call the office. The number is 501-324-5941. Obviously during all of the crisis that's going on now, the phone doesn't ring directly in the office right now, but it is transferred to somebody else's phone. So you'll get an answer, I promise you. Or they can email me. My email address is david.carnahan, C-A-R-N-A-H-A-N, @mail.house.gov. Or they can come by the office. The address is 1501 North University, Suite 630. It's in the Prospect Building in Little Rock. If you come up University past the mall, just before you get to the top of the hill on Cantrell, there's a big 9-story glass building on the right hand side, Prospect Building. And that's where we're at, 6th floor, 630. But I encourage everybody, reach out. I don't care if it's, you know, if you're filing a claim, you need your records. Without them, you're not going to get very far. If you order them on your own, it takes about a year, because NPRC processes something like 37 million requests a year. If you order them through our office, we can get them in about a month. And you can take those records. I don't care how small your problem is. It doesn't matter to me. If it's as small as changing your phone number at the VA and you don't know how to, or you don't know how to get on e-benefits, yeah, reach out. That's what we're there for.
So, David, does the veteran have to be in a certain district, or is this all of Arkansas?
So this is for our district, District 2, which is 7 counties right here in the middle of Arkansas. And each district has, whether you're in Crawford's district, whether you're in Westman's district, it doesn't matter. You could be in any one of those districts. They have a military and veteran liaison. If somebody reaches out to my office, it's not in our district. I can provide them with the number and contact information for whomever is in their district. Of course, the senator's office, whether it's Cotton or Bozeman, they have a great team there. You can reach out to them no matter where you live at in Arkansas. But for our office, we're in Arkansas 2nd Congressional District. So it's we help those in our district. And then whether that's by work or by referring them to the representative in their area. I even had, I think Congressman Hill told me some months back about a person they had run into in Oklahoma that heard about the veteran work we do here and wanted to move to Little Rock so that they'd come get help from our office. Happy to do that. I just couldn't help him if he was living in Oklahoma.
Yeah, and I actually think I do know at least one other veteran that has done that. And, you know, I have another veteran friend that doesn't want to leave here just because of that, because your office and you've helped them with so much. I mean, I've seen just personally friends, like you said, that I met with really, really problematic stuff going on that I've seen with my own eyes that you've helped. So I really, really appreciate that. I don't want to keep you too long because I think you are literally driving down the road to go help somebody else. But Jason, do you have anything else for David while we've got him on the line?
Yeah, I guess I would say ask one quick question is for those veterans out there that are that are struggling and that are isolating, what is just one thing or maybe an opportunity for those veterans out there to get them out and back interacting again and just helping the other service people, or just one piece of advice that you would give some of those veterans, David?
Man, I tell you what, so, and there's a couple different things. If you're struggling yourself, you know, I have found, and I struggle from time to time. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's because I work for a congressman and I'm a director of military and veteran affairs. It doesn't mean I don't struggle. But I have found some comfort in getting out and helping others, whether that's volunteering your time at St. Francis House, whether that's volunteering your time at the VA, you know, whether that's just spending time in the woods with other veterans that struggle just as much as you do. So that's, you know, there are a lot of different ways, and everybody's different, but there are a lot of different ways that you can help others and help yourself at the same time. But for those that want to just simply volunteer, I would encourage them to reach out to your veteran homeless shelters like St. Francis House. And just get out there and find those veteran organizations that need the assistance, like WAT 22 or St. Francis House or Our House has some veterans there. A lot of the homeless shelters around here have veterans scattered throughout them. You know, if you want to help, there are a lot of ways to help.
Yeah, you mentioned WAT 22. I'll go ahead and mention that too, since I'm a part of that organization, that we are always asking for volunteers. So if you're interested, I suggest maybe just go to We Are the 22 Facebook page and send a message. There's the website on there, www.wearethe22.com. There's a lot of different ways, as David said, to volunteer. And I also think it's okay to just volunteer in your own community. And that is one good thing that WAT 22, we have places all over. I just, one thing that I forgot to ask earlier, keep you for a little bit longer. You talked about struggling, and I know a lot of these veterans claim, especially our combat veterans, have a lot of physical things going on, but I don't know if you can even answer this, but you know, how often do you see that it's more of a mental health concern?
You mean like struggling physically, but realize that it's more of a mental concern than it is physical?
Yeah, or just coming to your office in general because of mental health, like PTSD, depression, anxiety.
I can't really answer that. But I can tell you from personal experience, just through friends of mine, that, I mean, anybody who's been to combat struggles to some degree. I mean, even, you know, I was outside the wire. I flew like 700 combat hours in a Black Hawk. So I didn't spend a whole lot of time inside the wire, but I found that even friends of mine that I knew that never left the wire still struggle from time to time. And the struggle is different. It is for everybody. But we all, if you've been to combat and seen, unless you were, you know, I don't know, spent your time in a chow all the entire time and hung out at the gym and didn't go anywhere, you know, even those people have struggles. I mean, we got bombed a lot when we were in Iraq on Balad, but everybody struggles. And it's, you know, anybody who's seen combat has got some struggle. Whether they recognize it or not, whether they choose to ignore it or not, it's there. So, I mean, I would venture a guess to say that every veteran that walks into a congressional office, whether it's ours or anyone else's, has either seen some struggles or is going through a struggle.
David, thank you so much for that answer and many other answers. I'm so grateful that you decided to come on with us, especially over Memorial Day. I think that everybody can learn so much from you about your story, and also just all the information and everything that your office can provide. And Jason, do you have something to say?
I was just going to say, David, love you, brother. Semper Fidelis. Keep up the great work, man. You're doing it.
Yes, David. You're getting some crayons. We've got a new T-shirt coming out that we're still working on the design for Crazy Talk. So I'm going to get you one of those. We're going to get you some crayons, too. Jason's more of a sparkly crayon guy. I got you the educated ones for, you know, school.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. I mean, we could probably sit here for the next 3 hours and talk about just a myriad of different things, whether it's VA. And I do want to point out, though, before I leave, I get my care at the VA. I don't get it all there. And there are some facets of the VA that I just can't stand. But there's a lot of good people working there. I've got real good friends of mine. I get a procedure in my back and my neck quite often where I burn the nerves. And interventional radiology is the department where I go down there. Wonderful people. Just amazing people that do amazing things and help a lot of different people. So the VA is not all bad. I mean, doing what I do, I come in contact with many, many, many different facets of the VA and different areas of it, different people. And I have formed my own opinions over the years. But I'm sure that if you walked into any civilian hospital, you would find some good and some bad. Though I do what I do there, I mean, I still have a great deal of respect for the VA and the people that work there. They do a job that I wouldn't want to do. So, with that, I mean, I appreciate you. Like I said, we could spend hours sitting here talking about different ways we can help, different things we can do, and maybe we'll have a follow-on. Who knows? But yes. I do appreciate you letting me come on and run my mouth and make me sound like I'm smart. So,
yeah, David, you did awesome, and I'm glad you brought that up about the VA because I've worked a lot in private health care, and I can guarantee with every private health care, you've got better departments than others. But also, they've got similar problems. Most of the problems with the VA are more administrative and policy. But when you get down to your social worker, you know, your doctor, they're healthcare providers. So I think it's important to try to look at that differently, if that makes sense, and not get so wrapped up the bureaucracy, you know?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So thank you again, David. And I definitely think we should do a follow-up. Are you on board with that, Jason?
Oh, yeah, please.
So thank you, listeners. Thanks for all your support. Big thanks to David. I hope everyone has a safe Memorial Day weekend. If you're struggling, don't forget to seek out support. You have a responsibility for that, too. I'm just going to throw a quick lecture in there. So thanks for listening. Be safe, everyone. Bye. Send me a ticket to the moon.